Hi, everyone, and welcome to Keyframe, the Geek Show's dedicated animation podcast. Yes, we have anime, cartoons, animated features, and all sorts of other things from stop motion to puppetry and everything in between. My name's Rob, and joining me today are Mark.
Hello.
And Tucky.
All right.
So, can I just start off with this strange anime questionnaire that's going around, which they're calling an anime census, but it's really just a questionnaire.
Yes, I've seen it floating around. It's from my understanding, there's a group of British, shall we say, British or Irish-based anime fans, use the term loosely, who are doing a anime census in hopes to save the anime industry.
The anime industry doesn't need saving by you. It needs your support, it needs your input, but it doesn't need you to save it. So stop being so bloody arrogant.
The first question is what does it need saving from?
Itself.
Mice.
Cheese.
They're terrible.
Because I'm thinking here, it's just like, unless they specifically say what it needs saving from, how can they save it?
Maybe it's going to be like one of those Mills and Boone novels, and they're going to swing in, you know, with bare-chested and, you know, and bare-backed and everything like that. And they're going to swing in, and the anime industry is going to be like the woman who swoons into their arms.
George of the Jungle, more like.
Yeah. the anime industry is collectively going to gaze at these people's rippling muscles and...
So yeah, I've seen it. It's shared about, and somebody tried to share it on Sonic Gun's page, and I deleted it. And I deleted it because of this reason, right? You've got to look at the anime industry as it's an actual industry. The anime industry is a multi-billion pound industry. It's like Japan needs this industry. If the anime industry was to collapse, Japan would collapse. And then so would most of the areas around Japan as well.
I don't think Japan would collapse, but I do think the Japanese entertainment industry would be set back by a good 20 years or so.
Oh, no, the actual country, like, it's like, you imagine Japan's held up by, like, different pillars. Like,
yeah,
that
it's,
would be
it's,
one
it's
of the
one
biggest
of their,
and strongest ones.
It's one of their primary cultural pillars is anime and manga.
Yeah, look at the Tokyo Olympics. They are putting anime characters front and centre for the biggest sporting event of the every 4 years.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things, this multi-billion dollar industry, which spends possibly hundreds of millions of pounds in things such as marketing research, the amount of people they'll take in everywhere around the world, from America, Brazil, Spain, UK, you name it.
Yeah.
These people already have the feelers out and already are gauging constantly with updated metrics and different analytics.
Yeah.
So what's this one petition, this one tiny online petition gonna do?
Yeah, but here's the thing. I wouldn't have had so much of a problem with it if it wasn't for a certain angle, right? I'm an older anime fan. I'm 42, going on 43, yeah?
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, and I'll admit, most people don't think I'm the age I am. They think I'm younger. I'm just well pickled. Just like Mark was a couple of shows ago.
Oh, yeah.
I'm an older anime fan. I've been watching anime for longer than most of the current crop of fans have been alive. And there are a few people who've been watching longer than I have. And full respect to them. But they'll be in the same boat as me. When you look at questionnaires like this, when they ask you, what are your top three favorite anime? And they don't have it on their list. What they have is all of the more recent populist stuff, because...
So was there any option to add your own, or was it just like...
No, you had
the anime that
you
liked.
You had an option to add your own, but my point is, I don't like being preempted by showing me the most recent stuff. If you're going to do a questionnaire, or a census, as you call it, but it's really just a questionnaire, if you're going to do something like that, don't automatically preempt people to select something that you want them to select. It's an old marketing tactic. I used to work in marketing. I know the tricks. The reason why they put those sorts of things there is people will automatically choose something off that list rather than thinking about it and choosing for something for that they actually do like, genuinely do like. They'll basically pick something off the list, and then these people then have a justification to turn around and say, well, hang on, loads of people chose this. We want more shows like this. Well, no, we don't want more shows like that. I, for one, would not want more shows like Kill la Kill.
Yeah. The end of the day, they're not going to look at a little survey that somebody's done.
Oh, I mean, but there might, if you look at the people who were involved, that's the thing, that when you look at the people who were involved, a friend of mine did the census and got in touch with me about it and said, have they asked you? I said, don't know anything about it. He said, have they asked Tucky? I said, I don't think Tucky knows anything about it either. He's the one who told me about this census. And he said, all right, well, I've emailed them and I've asked them why the hell they haven't asked you or Helen McCarthy or anyone else.
It's just stupid. I mean, at the end of the day, the people running the shows and stuff like that, they're not stupid.
No, they're not.
They know what works, and a few weaves who's sitting there going, oh, well, I want to see more of this obscure series here rather than, say, Monster Musume, because I don't want to see more fan service anime, and yet they're sitting there looking at reports going, well, Monster Musume managed to sell all of its allocation in Blu-rays, a lot of other series were released, haven't sold half that.
Yeah, I mean, let's be fair.
What are we going to do more of?
Yeah, but that's my point, Mark. If they're going to be doing a questionnaire like that and they're going to preempt people, be honest. Be honest with the things that you actually like when you're preparing these questions. If you want a certain type of show, but you basically want everyone to think that you're upright and, you know, and you're honest and upstanding. So obviously, no, we can't be doing with all of this fan service stuff. Be honest and say, I like big butts and I cannot lie. Right?
I was honest because I kind of knew what this was going for when I read some of the stuff, and I was just like, what do I want? Well, I'm not going to put my true fear at once, but I'll put prison school on there.
Yeah, but that's my point.
And I'll put Kidjo on there, and I'll put stuff like just to wind them up a bit.
But that's my point. You could tell by the ones that they were choosing and by the purposeful omission of certain popular shows like Monster Musume and Kidjo and stuff like that, because they are popular. They are ridiculously popular. I still don't know why, but I can't deny that they are popular.
Yeah, they make money.
Yeah.
We don't know why they're popular, but whether or not you enjoy it or not yourself, that's another matter. But as long as stuff like that's selling, they're going to continue doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
One of the more interesting things I noticed is later on, is it asks you, how do you watch your anime?
Yeah.
And the very first option for how do you watch your anime is, I watch it on an online site.
Yeah.
And now, to me, that could mean anything. That could mean you could watch it on Amazon. You could watch it on Crunchyroll. You could watch it on Netflix.
Oh, but
you could watch it on Kiss. You could watch it on Kiss Anime. And then I'm kind of thinking, well, if you're sitting there saying, then you watch something, you watch all your anime on Kiss Anime, how can you turn around and complain about the anime industry because
you're not supporting it?
You're not supporting it. So really, if I was a manager for, say, Kyo Ani, and I saw somebody sitting there going, well, I watch all of my anime on Kiss Anime. I don't buy any Blu-rays. I don't support, like, go on Crunchyroll. I don't go to the cinema.
Yeah.
I want to see less titles less titles that I don't know of. I want to see less titles like fan servicey ones, like maybe Amagi or Keon.
The long and short of it is, if you don't support the industry by buying Blu-rays or DVDs or watching legal streaming services, you don't have a right to an opinion.
If I was in charge of Kyo Ani and I saw somebody saying, oh, well, I don't support the anime industry, I was just like, well, I'm just going to throw your stuff in the bin. Why would I even care what you think?
And
I wouldn't sell anything to you.
What I would say to the people who were organising this questionnaire is, as soon as somebody checks that box, you throw their questionnaire away because they no longer have the right to an opinion.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like we just said, throw the questionnaire to one side, let's move on. Rant over and relax.
I don't feel I got a sufficient rant in there.
We've got plenty of show left, Tucky.
That's all right. You know what I'm doing, you know what's coming.
So moving from talking about streaming services, we've got another streaming service doing, well, kind of what the other streaming services are doing, isn't it? We've got anime streaming service High Dive have announced that they're going to start streaming dubcasts, which is obviously dubs of the simulcasts that they're getting, within 2 weeks of the first simulcast episodes.
So simul dubs, simulcast, it's all the same thing. It's just differently worded because of copyright.
Yeah, I'm.
Yeah.
I always get worried about this rapid turnover of putting out content. You know, having a 2-week turnover for a dub. If it's something that warrants a dub, great. If it's something that you feel would actually perform better if it had an English language version, fantastic. But if it's a niche title that no one's ever heard of, do you really want to put the money and the effort into redubbing it?
Well, you want to see how well the season's doing, really, don't you? I mean, High Dive, off the top of my head, they got a few of... They got a lot of Amazon Strike stuff last year. They got, I think in the UK, they got Made in Abyss and they got Land of the Lustrous.
Yeah.
I think they got some of the other ones that they nabbed from Crunchyroll, like Umaru-chan Season 2 and Picking Up Girls in the Dungeon Season 2.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Of those, right, Made in Abyss, yeah, okay, English dub, fine. Picking Up Girls in the Dungeon, that already has an English dub for Season 1, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So doing a dub for Season 2, that makes sense. It's continuation, yeah. That's fine. Land of the Lustrous, though, I don't think that would warrant an English dub. I wouldn't have dubbed it if it was my decision. I would have just left it as the Japanese language version because it's more of a niche title. Even though it was very well received by a lot of people who watched it, there were far more people who didn't watch it because they looked at it and went, looks a bit weird, I'm not into this.
Yeah, well, looking at the stuff, I mean, High Dive seems to be the guys who are getting all of Sentai Filmworks stuff at the moment, so...
Yeah.
Looking at the stuff, it's... Oh, that's what they're licensing, isn't it? They're just... I mean, because I've seen it, it's like they've got Food Wars. I was like, what?
So they came in like in-house, is this... Because when you say Cyril Dobson, they're doing it, is it the same voice actors? Or do they have their own talent pool? Or is it all going to be done through Funimation and then, like, passed out to...
Well, I think Sentai Filmworks has their own guys who do stuff, don't they? Because when I'm looking at the titles here, I'm seeing titles like Food Wars, Amagi Brilliant Park. I'm just trying to find some of the other stuff that they've done. Well, Food Wars and Amagi Brilliant Park, I don't believe, were done by Funimation, were they?
So it'll be interesting to see, because it's like we're saying, like, the voice acting talent pool needed to be a bit deeper than it was. And I've seen a lot of, like, new voice talents, like, being trained by the likes of Sonny Strait and whatnot and Steve Blum. All these, like, all the old-timers are now, I hope they don't mind us calling them old-timers, but all the seasoned veterans, shall we say, they're doing their own voice classes, and there's a lot of that crop that are actually just going straight into voice acting.
Yeah.
But, and getting anime parts as well.
But still, they're all American.
Oh, they're still all American, but we're starting to see people actually travelling to these work classes because it's now became a thing. Like, you know how NXT is to the WWE, where they all start out in NXT and then they move on to, like, Raw or SmackDown.
Yeah, and that'll be great once that is actually happening. And the thing is, it's a credit to people like Steve Blum and Sonny Strait and everyone else who are actually running these workshops, and I really applaud the fact that they're doing that. You know, I think it's amazing that they're doing that, and I won't have a bad word said about them. But when it comes to the corporate side of things, you know, when it comes to the production side of things, there are great voice actors in other countries who they could easily get in touch with.
That's another thing. I mean, like you're saying, they're going to be in for like 2 weeks turnaround.
Yeah.
On these, and if you get mistakes, if you want to see how bad turnaround's done, watch Yo-Kai Watch. The amount of mistakes in anime, I know it's only like a kid's anime, it's supposed to be like Pokemon-ish, but the amount of mistakes and even the crap songs were crapper because it was all rushed.
Yeah, that's my point. When it's rushed like that, you are going to get mistakes. Instead of redubbing the song, leave the song as it is. People are fine with music that's foreign these days, okay? It's not 50 years ago.
Don't want any more Vic Mignogna's wampus.
But I mean, it's quite interesting that they're going to do this. I just hope that they do it with the correct care and attention that they deserve.
Yeah.
Yes. Moving on. Well, another one, a series that we've covered many times on 4Panel, is finally getting an anime adaptation. That's right. Finally, Vinland Saga is getting its TV anime.
Yay! The thing is, this year, the two that I'm calling it right now, right? Because it's Studio Wit who are doing Vinland Saga, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wit Studio, who are famous for Attack on Titan and various others, them doing Vinland Saga, that gives me goosebumps because Vinland Saga is... Hey, you guys have read Vinland Saga, yeah?
I've read the first two volumes. That's all.
Okay, so far. End of volume one, the whole thing with Thors.
Mm-hmm.
And basically how that ends. Imagine that animated.
Oh, I'm really excited for
imagine, it. Imagine, no. I'm going to go one step further. Imagine that animated with the same production values as Attack on Titan.
Definitely.
Who's got goosebumps now?
It's something to get really excited for. I mean, I'm only two volumes, which is like over here, that's four volumes in Japan.
Yeah.
And
they are big books.
They are big books. And they're beautiful books as well.
They are fantastic books.
I like big books and I cannot lie.
Yeah, it's been a fantastic read so far, and it's something a little bit different compared to the usual stuff that's been coming out, because it's obviously based on Vikings in Europe.
Well, I mean, if you liked shows like Vikings or The Last Kingdom or anything like that, then you're going to like Vinland Saga.
You definitely are. But yeah, I mean, it's exciting to see that they're finally going to bring it out, because I mean, it's been going on for a long time now, hasn't it? Yeah,
it's such a great story. And between that and Hinomaru, see, we talked about the fact that Hinomaru's on 4-panel. We did talk about Vinland Saga getting an anime, and we did talk about Hinomaru getting an anime as well, Hinomaru Zumo. And that then spawned the amazing fictional sport, which we want to be a real thing, of Viking Sumo.
So it's going to be like an interesting Highland Games.
Viking Sumo, Tucky. We should do it at Sunny.
No, man. Do you know how much health and safety I'm going through at the moment?
No, we get like the sumo suits, but then we give them Viking horned helmets.
Viking helmets didn't have horns. Historical accuracy. That's what I live for.
All right, then braids. We give them braids then.
The manliest braids in the world.
Yeah, we braid their beard or something, you know, but we give them sumo suits and braids. And, you know, then just basically let them do Viking Sumo.
Oh dear.
See, now I've said it, you're tempted, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. It's when people come up with the stupidest ideas, I think, you know what, it hasn't been done at a convention, why not? But Vinland Saga, right, it's gonna be an amazing adaptation, and it's one of them ones we keep saying, like, we keep pulling out these titles and they keep getting me an anime. And you know, I don't want to sound hipster or anything, but, you know, kind of like the Geek Show, like, did warn yous.
We have been warning them for a long time.
There has been a lot of fantastic announcements coming out for, like, the past few weeks. I mean, obviously, this is on the back of Goblin Slayer being announced.
Yep.
And being turned into a slime.
Oh, yes.
There was something else as well, wasn't there, that's been announced as well?
I can't remember what it was.
I can't remember what it was. There was something major, something that was quite big that we've been talking about.
Have they promised Neverland an anime yet?
Nah, that'll be soon. That's got to be soon.
Promise it's Neverland. Be. Yeah, it's pretty much guaranteed.
Actually, seeing that, like, Rob, you weren't there when we were talking about it, and you had some gripe about a certain series not being brought into the new world for quite some time.
Oh, Ashita no Joe. Yeah, surprise me, Mark. What's been happening there?
Well, there's a new series airing in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, we didn't know about this. This flew right under our radars, and we're usually pretty on the ball with this stuff as well.
I was just like, there's one coming. I was like, I'm sure Amazon's got something like that. I'm sure it's out like next season. I was just like, no, we're going to have to mention it.
Yeah, for the first time, the industry's ahead of us.
It makes a nice change. This is the thing. It makes a really nice change.
It does.
Let's see if we can tackle the lead again.
God, I've just seen... Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Have you seen the new Turtles trailer as well?
No. He said no. You know, like that the Latino grandma who does all the cleaning on Family Guy?
Oh, no. Consuela.
Consuela, that's it. No.
Mr. Superman, no home.
So, yeah, what was I saying?
You were saying no.
Repeatedly.
No. Anyway, yeah, Ashita no Joe, I am happy. Do we know who is at, which studio is actually working on it?
Inspires new TV anime with original story in spring 2018.
Oh, God. Original story.
It says, while it is based on Ishita no Joy, it will tell an original story.
Oh, God, oh, no. Dear. I'm already hating it.
Oh, dear. Oh,
well, hang on the other hand, the person who's in charge of it is the one who did Lupin the Third, the woman called Fujiko Mine. Mine, or you.
Fujiko Mine.
Mine, mine.
So the person directing it is the person who thought, oh, I know. I'll do a Lupin the Third thing. I'll do the woman called Fujiko Mine, because Fujiko Mine is a great character. She's like the most popular female character in anime, bar none. So, yeah, I'll do it about her childhood. What else could I do to make this edgy and cool? Let's make her naked a lot, because that's a good idea.
Yeah. I can't actually find out who it actually is, who's actually... Which studio's doing it? It doesn't say, but... Apparently, the title's actually called Megalobox.
Oh, yeah, found it. Megalobox is Ishita no Joe 50th Anniversary Project. Junk Dog, or JD, as he's called, which makes me think of Scrubs, participates in fixed boxing matches in an underground ring in order to live. Today, he enters the ring again, but he encounters a certain person. JD wants to take on a challenge that risks everything. And there is a trailer for it. It's TMS Entertainment doing it, and it's Yo Moriyama who's directing it.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen the trailer?
No.
Nope. I watched it a few weeks ago. It was announced.
I'm just going to have a quick look at the teaser. I'm hating this already.
Oh, no.
Oh, well, it's only 5 seconds. Give it another two.
No, I'm hating this already because it's like a combination of Elysium meets Real Steel, meets some kind of low-budget boxing movie. It doesn't really have anything that I would say is like Ishita no Joe.
It's called Megalobox.
Yeah. There's a reason why Ishita no Joe is called the Japanese Rocky, and we went over this on the last show, the exact reasons why. It is the story about the underdog coming up and basically making good and giving his all for his dream. Until there was literally nothing left. This does not look or sound like that.
That's a shame.
It sounds like somebody looked at Ishita no Joe and said, you know, we need another boxing thing. We'll basically say it's inspired by Ishita no Joe, and we'll say it's part of the 50th anniversary project, but we'll give them cybernetic arms and stuff like that, and we'll basically call it Megalobox, and we'll make it sci-fi and slightly edgy and cool, and, you know, the kids will like that.
Say, when you say Megalobox, I think it's some kind of discount store and concert.
See, I thought it was just some kind of set meal at KFC. It's got Ishita no Joe attached to it. So I will still watch it in the hopes that it is actually good. But on the basis of that teaser, not expecting much.
We'll try it and see how it works.
Moving on. Mark, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'm happy to go first because this is something that we kind of covered previously. I haven't really had much chance to watch anime. I was away last week and I thought I'd try the Funimation sub and I couldn't decide on what it was I actually wanted to watch. Then I saw it. Prison School, the live action. Now, as we all know, live actions of anime is quite hit and miss. And for me, Prison School is one of those series where I kind of thought, nah, there's no way they're going to be able to do it convincingly. However, they actually did extremely well with the Prison School live action. It is as stupid and nonsensical as the anime. It's the 12 episodes from the original anime series condensed into 9 episodes, so it does skim over some of the later scenes slightly, but what it does is it does everything extremely well. So if you have read or seen Prison School before and you know like the over-the-top reactions, the random, sometimes unnecessary fan service.
Sometimes unnecessary? Sometimes unnecessary?
To be fair, in Prison School, most of the fan service is actually integrated into the plot.
To be fair, in Prison School, most of the fan service is not really necessary.
But, yeah, they actually put all of the stuff that you expected from it into the series. And I was watching it, and I was honestly surprised at how well they actually managed to pull this off.
You might want to change your phrasing there.
No, I love Prison School, and this is a decent start at doing Prison School. Like I said, everything you want from Prison School's there. They have toned down a lot of the nudity. It's kind of just like fan servicey rather than full blown nudity. That is in the uncut, but this is Funimation, so of course it is. But this was literally everything from the series lifted into live action and done rather well.
Okay.
So hang on, I've got a checklist, right? So Water Sports, did they do that?
Water Sports, how do you mean? Yes. I was like, what? It's like, yes, they did that in both on each other.
See, I was waiting for Mark to say, yeah, there was a great water polo scene. There was a great scene in the pool.
They did the chairman's scene. In fact, they actually updated the chairman slightly to, like, because you see a little bit more of his room, so they've got them having statues in his room. But all of the statues are turned away.
So, where he craps himself.
Yeah, that's it. That's awesome. It. Guan Yu rides again in it.
The stiletto up the backside.
Yeah.
Stiletto heel.
Yep. The arm wrestling match with the nipple hair.
Oh.
Some things are kind of glossed over. A lot of the stuff for Andre is like they kind of reduced that because that was more or less a full episode. That's kind of reduced into about 5 minutes. You don't get some of the build up with him, and you don't get some of the build up with Shingo and that other girl. But yeah, honestly, everything that you can think of that you wouldn't expect to be in the live action is actually in the live action.
I'll be honest, I have just had a look at the cover or poster for Prison School, well, one of the posters, and I'll be honest, it looks like the cover of a porn movie.
Oh yes, it's very low budget, but to be honest, what else are you expecting from Prison School? It's like, that's kind of what Prison School is.
What, low-budget 70s softcore porn?
Basically, it's just like, especially the chairman, I was just like, he's done porn. You could tell.
He does have that air of grace about him. Like, he's been naked on camera, but who cares?
But yeah, I mean, like, all of the characters were decent. I mean, some of the wigs were a little bit dodgy, but for a live action, I was really surprised at how well it was. And honestly, I'm actually going to put my hand in and say this is actually the most accurate live action anime I've ever seen.
Are you just choosing your words on purpose here?
I'm looking at some of the live action characters, and the casting is spot on for some of them.
Yeah, I'll admit the casting is very, very good.
They even got the fat guy down.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they can't put him with a tiny face on a normal, like on a giant head, but that's impossible anyway. You know what I mean?
It's the best they can do with a bad situation.
Yeah, but I mean, you can tell it's done on a low budget, but then you kind of think, well, Prison School doesn't need a huge budget, really. It's not, like, incredibly flashy. As long as they make poop noises and boob jokes, then you're pretty much fine.
Yeah, the Foley artists are getting paid a fortune on this one.
Yeah, I hope they broke even at least.
We need a sound effect for what? Do you just want to repeat that again?
Well, you never know. They might have just did what they did in the actual series and just had a guy do it himself. But yeah, it's on your Funimation subscription if you've still got it. It's worth a check out if you like Prison School.
When you say it's on your Funimation subscription, I'm assuming it's voluntary and not like U2's album.
Yeah.
Good.
Funimation's not going to come over and put a gun to your head and force you to watch it.
It's not just suddenly going to appear on there. I mean, imagine if there's some grandma who's got a Funimation subscription, because they do exist, and she's going to sit around with her grandkids and go, you know, we're going to watch something fun, and then the live-action Prison School comes out. She's like, I didn't pick this.
I think it's actually the only live-action thing they've got on there. So it's very possible that that actually could actually happen.
Just say, oh, Prison School, this'll turn them straight.
Yeah, it started to sound more like the U2 album the more you describe it, though. It's the only live-action thing on there.
I'm sure there was very little live-action stuff on there. I was actually quite surprised to see it there.
I'm actually quite surprised to see it anywhere.
It was popular enough to get a live-action. I mean, everything's got a live-action these days, hasn't it?
So... Monster Musume doesn't.
I was going to say, the way they're banning like games and whatnot, I wouldn't be surprised to see that one get banned straight away.
Yeah.
I think somebody at the British, was it the British Film Certification?
BBFC, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they just pick it up and got nap. Just look at the cover like,
No. I actually think they'll look at it and go, I don't care. Because at the end of the day, it was the BBFC that took High School DxD or High School DD and said, let's see, uncensored, that's fine. Let's see, what rating should we give it for this full frontal nudity that we have in front of us and all of these very, very sexual situations? Let's give it a rating of 15. Because that's a good idea.
And Netflix looked at it and went, you know what? It's a 15. We'll have it.
Yeah.
I think Prison School and Monster Musume and all, most of the others are now 18s, aren't they? So.
Yeah, the thing is, my point is, High School DD is basically porn. And you can't legally buy porn until you're over the age of 18 in the UK, unless it's animated.
Yeah, it's a bit silly, really. Anyway, shall we move on from Prison School into something else?
So this week I've got out of my shell and I've decided to go, you know what, Digimon Try 2 needs reviewing. I can't remember when I did the Digimon 1 review, but I was very animated.
Oh, that was about a year ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. So did this test you? Did it tax you?
Well, it did. So the recap is everyone's favourite Digi-Destined have been thrown back together. And even after the like literal decades have passed, the Digi-Destined have somehow became high schoolers. Because, you know, the concept of a bunch of kids scarred by events from which they might now be questioning as adults might have been, oh, well, might have been an acid trip, might have been hallucinating. It definitely didn't happen. It's too difficult a concept. No. So unlike America, the safest place in Japan, both in real life and anime, is a high school. And I've done the first review of Digimon Try Movie 1, which was Reunion, which is basically they get back together and... That was the basic premise of movie one. It's the Digi-Destined to get back together. And so now I've got Digimon Try 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Does it still have the theme tune?
Kind of has the theme tune, but it's all like rocked up and updated for the modern audience.
When you say rocked up, are you talking like just normal rock music, as in like old style rock and roll?
So no. Like I'm talking like as if they're sitting in a chair which rocks back and forward, trying to sing, and the harmonies are all out. And
oh, right. So like a Later Life Johnny Cash song.
Yeah.
unless it's just you singing Hurt with a banjo. I heard the news today. I'm going to have to watch Digimon Try Again.
It's already turning into a stellar review. So Digimon Try 2, I think there's like six of these movies, so this is me like a third of the way through.
I want to ask, what do the Digimon try to do?
I don't know why they call it try, because try is usually like three. I thought they were going for like just three movies.
Yeah, but when you say Digimon Try 2, I'm thinking, what is it they want to do?
Digimon Try 2, Determination. And Determination should be the theme because you need determination to get through this. Because it's basically the plot's continuing where the first movie left off. Earth is being invaded by infected Digimon sporadically and now like the more mature Digi-Destined are being thrust into the fray with their old pals. And they've added a new Digi-Destined in the form of like the shy, withdrawn, glasses-wearing Miko. And her Digimon, which keeps the tradition of the laziest naming process in anime, the Digimon is also named Mikomon. Get? Yep. Miko and Mikomon.
So I guess they're going to end up having something to do with shrine maidens or something like that.
Yeah, I thought, like, you know, Plantmon, Birdramon, It's like, oh, what does it look like? Oh, it looks like a bird. Oh, I've got a bird room on then.
I've got to ask. I'm still not clear what these infected Digimon actually are. Are they zombie Digimon? Or are they just Digimon who have got, like, the flu and are spreading it around by coughing over everybody?
It's more the flu. It's more that kind of outbreak thing. They have a purple cloud. You know, like when someone's poisoned or they've eaten, like, a really bad meal in anime and they get that whole purple mist around them. It's kind of like that, but they get taken over and they go berserk. So, that's all I really know about it so far, because they will not explain a single thing in this blooming movie.
Maybe they'll wait until the end when they do the big reveal.
I think they've already kind of done a big reveal. That it's, like I said, they've thrown in a new Digidestined, and they've also thrown in the fact that the government, I think where it's based like Japan, the Japanese government know about the Digidestined, have for a while, and they've got agents Nishima and Maki, like, shadow them. Apparently, it's been, like, most of their life, so...
Can I just point out, if the Japanese government know about them, every government knows about them.
You're trying to say the Japanese government doesn't know how to keep secrets?
No, I'm trying to say there are that many spies in the world that people don't actually know who's actually working for who anymore. I wouldn't be all surprised if, from random parts of the world, MI6 keep getting letters from these old people who have been spies for MI6, that MI6 has actually forgotten that they have.
Well, Gerald out in the Philippines, I've been spying all my life. Yeah. MI6 just goes, who the hell sent us postcards from the Philippines?
Exactly.
Tell Teresa we've got another one.
That's my point.
Blame Russia. Don't worry, it's easy. Just blame Russia. No, it'll happen. No bad will happen. Anyway, so this plot for movie two, it's basically the biggest filler episode at best. They managed to fit in the spa episode and the school festival episode all into one movie.
Is that right?
We're just one beach trip away from a line in the old trope bingo.
I was going to say, did they do that by combining the two? So instead of having like a cafe or something like that, they basically just opened like a hot spring as part of the school festival.
they could have done that, but apparently it's the whole, they're trying to get Miko to bond in with them, and they decide to go to a spa. And there's one thing that did do good, which was instead of the men going into the women's changing room, it was the girls who went in the men's changing room. So shaking it up there. And the spa episode's immediately followed by, oh, we have a school festival. What we're going to do for the school festival? Well, our class always does a maid calf, surprisingly. Yeah. And they call it daters. It's kind of like Hooters, but they wear cheerleaders' uniforms. And the thing is, the focus on this, because there's so many Digidestined, for some reason, I think each movie's going to focus on two at a time. And I think the first movie more focused on Matt and Ty, the original, like, two leaders, shall we say, with really deep underlying sexual tension between them both now that they're of age. And this movie was more focused on padding out the characters of Mimi and Joe. And Mimi's like the fashion conscious cowgirl. Kind of, they kind of had her as like an American country bumpkin kind of character.
Yeah.
And
I actually liked her being like an American country bumpkin. I liked her being the foreigner in this, you know? That made sense to a degree. And it was nice that they actually had somebody who was foreign in this. I think that in anime, there's not enough foreign characters.
No, I'll agree with you there.
In shows that are set in Japan, I should say, there aren't enough foreign characters, and it would be great to see more foreign characters on the good side. Let me be clear. I don't want you to do what Hollywood does to British people all of the time, in that because we have a British accent, automatically we must be very, very smart and very, very evil.
Aren't we?
I mean, we voted for Brexit, man. We're hardly the smartest species out there.
No, I'm saying, according to Hollywood, we're all highly educated because we have British accents, and we're all obviously the bad guys.
I blame Liam Neeson.
Don't blame Liam Neeson. It's not just his fault. You know, it's also people like Ben Kingsley and various others who've played Sir Patrick Stewart. They've all played the bad guy at some point.
Sorry, I'm watching the new American Dads, and Patrick Stewart is by far the best part of American Dad now.
Yeah.
It's just like he'll turn up in the studio, he'll probably say some daft nonsense, and they'll just animate around it.
Now, do you know what
comedy gold.
Now, do you know what it probably is? It's probably him and Ian McKellen, right? And he phones Ian McKellen up. He's like, Ian, I've got another Family Guy episode to film. What should I say? Just him and Ian McKellen brainstorming, going, you know, just say this, it'll be hilarious. And then him and Ian McKellen just turning up on the drive along there, and Ian McKellen's just standing at the back laughing his ass off.
They sound like British villains when you do it like that.
Yes.
Ruining American animation. Well, we'll somehow end up on Sir Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen somehow.
It's because theirs is the greatest Shakespearean bromance. it is, isn't it? It's a Shakespearean bromance, let's be fair.
It is. I love longer than time itself. Man, he may as well be pissed. No, right, back on. It's this Mimi, who I thought I'd learned everything, but Digimon Super Digivolves or Mega Digivolves or, you know, the bigger Digivolve, because they're like Digivolve into Champion, Digivolve into Ultimate, Digivolve beyond that. And she has a BDSM Rosebush as a Digimon.
A what?
A bit of an S&M Rosebush. It's like,
are you
full
sure
on
we're
kinky...
still, no, are you sure we're still talking about Digimon, not Prison School?
No, definitely. 100%. It was a Rosebush with a whip. And
with a what?
With a whip.
Oh my god, I'm just looking at it. It's like got a rose head, a mouth, like a cape, and
yeah, it's,
boobs.
It's very full on curvy rosebush.
It is literally the girl from Prison School, only more flowery.
Yeah, that's why I said, are you sure you're not talking about Prison School?
No, it's like if Alan Tishmarsh actually found a fertilizer which made him a girlfriend.
Wow.
So, moving on from Alan Tittymarsh and into...
So back on. So, anyway, I'm going to try and give the movie some positive points because I love being fair and balanced and all that. They actually nail down teenage problems and just what it's like in life. Because you got the character Mimi, who's very outgoing. Like, anybody asks something, she's usually first with a hand up saying, go on then, I'll volunteer. Obviously, not like, get go on then. But it's like, me, I'll do it. I'll run the maid's calf. And we can all wear cheerleader outfits. And my woman voice is very terrible.
Yes, it is.
I sound like a theatrical dame. But it's one of the things, like, you know, anybody in life, oh, they look happy. What are you going to do? You're going to try and knock them down a few pegs because why should they be happy when I'm not? And they nail that on because Mimi immediately... Like, she's like, oh, well, when cheerleader dresses, the other lasses are like, well, you didn't ask us. You just went ahead and said it. You know, you're narcissist. And it's like, well, you're using narcissist and Digimon? That kind of word in that kind of anime? This part of the town? This part of the day?
Oh, yes.
Can I see it?
No.
So Mimi's a narcissist. And, like, you know, that kind of emotional bullying that you see in school, that's actually a good point, like how accurate they get that on. As for the other character they're trying to pad out, Joe, obviously in the last movie it was like, well, he's always busy. He's got bad grades and he's trying to study. He wants a normal life. He can't be bothered on with all of this like digi-dest and stuff. You know, he wants to leave school and actually have a decent job, which is fair and admirable. I think Joe is like the spirit animal of every like body who's sick of watching Digimon. I said in my last review, look, it's all right if you're a nostalgia trip, but you know, these kids have grown up, just let them live their lives. Joe even wants, you know, he's doing his exams, he's studying all the time. He doesn't want the inconvenience of having to run off across town to battle some, like, you know, digital code. Sound snaff. There'd be a great comedy series, you know, all the ways, like, Joe's trying to live his life. And, like, he's just getting a call, like, oh, there's a Digimon battle going on across town. He's, like, tacking a shit or something. You know, they could make a load of comedy shorts out of that. And I think that would be funny, but... As for the movie, it's not funny at all. It's just Joe being interrupted by Digimon battles. 1 minute he's studying, and then his Digimon's like, oh, I've brought you some noodles and that. He's like, oh, cheers. And then he just breaks down crying, like, oh, why am I always getting pestered? I just want to live a normal life. And at the end, he comes to a realization that, well, they need him, so, you know, he might as well.
So this might as well be called Joe Interrupted.
Yeah. He's the thing is, his Digimon super mega big ass evolves into what looks suspiciously copyrighted 4.
Yeah, see, it used to evolve into 4, didn't it?
Yeah, but it now gets shoulder pads. So Mega 4 were a horn.
What was his one called?
Gomamon was this?
I can't remember, to be honest. I watched it, and none of it really stuck. And like I say, it's that's all it is. It's just a focus on Mimi and Joe and a lot of filler. Like I say, there's nothing much goes on with the other characters apart from the intense sexual tension between Matt and Ty. And I mean, the topless, actually, you know, they're in a spa, the topless, staring at each other in the sauna. You know, no, not a word spoken, but we all know what's going on.
Prison school was bad.
Digimon is worse. But it's just basically, it's the super hardcore teen angsty digi depressed versus Ken and Imperial Dramon. The main villain in this is just some guy who stands and then disappears now and then like nicks off with Miko Mon at the end and then lets her go. But turns out, like, infected or something. But I'm not going to spoil it for you because you've got to have some payoff of watching this crap.
All right.
So it's basically, it's the plot is all filler. Areas, you know, there's nout worth watching for. I mean, animation-wise, there's a lot of shortcuts in the animation.
Yeah.
They use a lot of still frames. And, like, if any casual viewer was watching it, you wouldn't notice it. But if you know what a cartoon or an anime looks like when it has zero to little budget, when it uses like still animation for like 5 seconds, the volume's still going, the talking's still going on, but it just looks like it's frozen in places. Or they've got that the one still frame, but the camera shakes. so it's like, oh, there's action going on here. It's like, no, mate, you've just ran out of budget.
You mean like the old Star Trek episodes?
Yeah. It's like the $1 million man, but we don't want to spend a lot of money.
So just move really slow and we'll put this sound effect to it.
Yeah. There's nothing really else I can add apart from, like, obviously, like Agent Mackey's a little bugger. You know, she had a wry smile at the end when things happened, and not going to spoil it. Oh, and wow. Apart from that, you get a cameo from Leomon and Ogamon. If you watch the original, you know, Leo Mon's that big half man, half lion, and Ogamon's obviously an ogre. But they just added Mon on the end because Digimon. Yeah. But it's nothing special. But I suppose if you are going for every movie or you are that hardcore nostalgist, you know, it's worth watching. But for me, it's starting to wear us down a bit. I can actually feel my life force slowly leaving with every minute I watch. And I'm dreading the fact that this is only a third of the way through. Hmm. It has to pick up at some point. Otherwise, you know, it's got to be me in some tragic self-inflicted accident just because the boredom was that bad.
Self-inflicted Digimon accident.
I become infected.
Okay, so me next then, is it?
Aye.
Yeah, aye. Well, this is something that you guys could probably join in on. This one is Knocking on Heaven's Door, which, for those of you who probably don't remember or have never heard of it, is the Cowboy Bebop movie. Yeah,
it's by Chicken Shed.
Yeah, it's been re-released. It's out on Blu-ray and DVD with all sorts of extras. It's got some great extras on there. Let me get that out of the way.
Stuff with the extras in.
So you have like the making of Cowboy Bebop, which is 6 behind-the-scenes featurettes, a music video for Ask DNA and Got to Knock a Little Harder, conceptual art galleries, storyboard comparisons, and a series of in-depth character profiles, which are the voice actor things that I was talking about, theatrical trailers, animated menus, and that's about it. It's a lot, though, and so there is a lot of extra content that you can go through alongside the movie. In terms of production, it's solid, right? It's Studio Bones who've made this. But they're not the company that did the original TV series.
No, that's what I noticed.
Yeah, they aren't the company that did the original TV series, which upset some people when this came out originally. This originally did get released in 2001, in September 2001. People weren't happy about the fact that Bourne's did the movie, but Bourne's, I reckon, did a good job. You know, Sunrise did the original TV series, and they did a great job with their TV series. And Bourne's, they applied a slightly different aesthetic. There were little tweaks and changes here and there, but I think the overall, in terms of the animation production, in terms of the art design and the aesthetic of the movie, I think it was very, very good. Just a little bit different, you know, and I think it's like, you know, the two versions of Fullmetal Alchemist?
Yeah.
There's a slightly different take on the aesthetic from one to the other, isn't there?
Yeah.
And it's basically that difference. They're both equally good. They're both equally solid. It's just, it's a slightly different take on the art design, stuff like that. So it's one of those beauty is in the eye of the beholder things. I think it's not really something that you need to pay attention to. The story is basically just a story arc from the TV series. It's just that. It's like 2 hours long. I think it's around, it clocks in at around 120 minutes or something like that. And it is just a very, 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 very long episode where they are hunting for one guy, right? And this guy is, it starts off on Mars, and it's 49 years after Earth was mostly abandoned. Spike and the rest of the gang are all together. And they're basically on the trail of a guy who's got the biggest bounty in their experience, in humanity. He's got a bounty of 300 million Wulongs. Is it Wulong, the credit?
Yeah, Wulong. Yeah.
So, this guy who they're hunting, a few days before Halloween, he exploded a truck in Mars' capital city, and he killed or injured over 300 people with a new pathogen. Or what they think is a new pathogen, and the Mars government has issued this record bounty. Faye, who was pursuing a different guy, a hacker, who was apparently driving the truck, sees the terrorist, and the rest of the Bebop crew decide to go for the bounty, right? And then each of them follow different lines of inquiry. Ed uses a tattoo as a means of identification for the culprit. Jet follows his own leads. Spike follows his own leads. Everybody has got their own leads, and they're all leading to the same place. It's interesting because what you have, effectively, is four different narrative strings leading to the same conclusion, which is the same director as the TV series. It is Shinichiro Watanabe. And it's great to Watanabe that he basically manages to weave these four narrative threads into this one complete story. The story has its action, it has its intrigue, it has all of that stuff, and it is an extended episode, but it's still a good addition to the franchise. It's a bit like, you know, Trigun Badlands Rumble?
Yeah.
It's like that. Trigun Badlands Rumble was a great addition to Trigun, but it was just basically an extra long episode. And Knockin' on Heaven's Door is the same for Cowboy Bebop.
It's got humour in there as well.
Oh yeah, it's Cowboy Bebop.
Been ages since I've seen it, but it's just that opening scene where it's like the convenience store's been held up. He just walks in with his headphones on, just starts kicking people's ass after setting off a party popper.
Yeah.
Just at the end, as I put my donut on their tab.
Yeah. But the thing is, how could it not have comedy? You've got Ed as a character.
Yeah, I mean, Ed's whole like little side story where they're going around trick or treating was just.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
It was superb. And that whole bit when Faye says to Ed, do not move from this spot. And then Ed and Einstein see the kids trick or treating, and Ed just runs straight off for them. I'm like, yeah, that's Ed.
Yeah. I mean, I felt the same as you guys. I mean, it was a good watch. Like you said, it was an hour and a half, 2 hours. It just felt like another episode.
Yeah. But the thing is, I didn't mind the fact that it was 2 hours. I actually quite liked the fact that it was 2 hours because I could watch it all in one go, and it was like watching an entire story arc. I felt happy by the end of it that the movie was over. I felt uncomfortable because I really needed to use the facilities, but I was happy because it was more Cowboy Bebop, and what's not to like about that?
Exactly.
You know, the number of people I've had arguments with in anime circles over the years that I've been a fan But there's one thing that everyone seems to agree on, is that Cowboy Bebop has a special place.
You don't find many people who don't like the series or movie, to be honest. It's I think it's like the first anime like to actually transcend the whole you either love it or hate it, because you either love it or, you know, it's all right.
Yeah. I don't know anybody who outright hates Cowboy Bebop. And the main reason. Sorry?
As soon as I mentioned it, I was like, oh, I might watch Cowboy Bebop. And like, you're watching that? Oh my God, it's worst thing ever. I was just like, you are dead to me now. We all love Cowboy Bebop. Everyone does. There's nobody who doesn't.
I don't know anybody who doesn't like Cowboy Bebop. And that's not to say there aren't people who dislike Cowboy Bebop. But the first question I would have for those people is, what exactly is it that you don't like about the show? Because from my perspective, I'm not saying it's a perfect show. I'm not saying that by any measure. But what I am saying is it does a lot of things right that makes it appealing to a very, very, very wide spectrum of people. And that includes the quality of the English dub. And I don't hesitate to call that an English dub. Right.
The English dub is fantastic. Isn't it one of the ones where Japan even enjoyed the English dub?
Yeah, it's one of those rare occasions where the Japanese audience, Cowboy Bebop has been critically acclaimed as one of the anime to watch. The score has changed a little bit over the years. I think it's only clocking in about 65% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes at the moment. But Cowboy Bebop is one of those shows where the longer it's been around, the more people have appreciated exactly what Shinichiro Watanabe and everyone else at Sunrise and at Bones, and also what Yoko Kanno, with that amazing intro theme, what all of them accomplished with that series. There are more people who are realizing just how good that show actually is and how nuanced that show is, especially as you look back on it with hindsight.
I've just said it's definitely one of those ones. I mean, I think Spike Spiegel, the character, actually like launched Dave Blum's career, and like that set him for life.
Yeah,
I mean Wendy Lee as well, big voice actors, and it was Cowboy Bebop that actually made them.
Yeah, Wendy Lee was playing Faye, wasn't it? Paul Billingsley was playing Jet. Melissa Farn, another one who had a pretty interesting career afterwards, was playing Ed. So you had a lot of these characters and a lot of these voice actors had their careers started because of this series, and they went on to great things afterwards.
Well, there was a funny story, actually. This was Trina Nishimura from Mikasa from Attack on Titan, her and Bryce. And it was funny because it was at a fan panel where they were saying, like, oh, Trina, what anime would you like to have been in, like you haven't been in? And she said Cowboy Bebop. Bryce was like, oh, I was in that. And it's like, you gotta think, like, this was way back when Bryce was a kid. Apparently, obviously, Bryce's dad was a voice actor himself.
Yeah,
he was in the studio, and Bryce got to play a bit part of a kid with a pot in his head. And so in the credits there's Pothead and Bryce Papenbrook.
Yep.
Gets the credit for Pothead and in the show, so little bit of information that people might not know, but now they do.
I knew that because Bryce told us about that.
Oh, so he's telling everyone, is he?
I think he told us because I asked him point blank, you know, what was the first thing you were in? And I was surprised to find out it was Cowboy Bebop. But the thing is, Watanabe himself, what did he go on to do after Cowboy Bebop?
Space Dandy, did he? Did he do Space Dandy?
Not just Space Dandy. I mean, he did Samurai Champloo, Kids on the Slope. He did Terror in Resonance, which not a lot of people liked. Wasn't a great series, but everybody has to have an off day. I mean, think about it. Cowboy Bebop. No, think about it, though. Cowboy Bebop, Samurai Champloo, Kids on the Slope, and Space Dandy.
Oh, he did something in Genius Party as well.
Yeah. You know, he's done those, and he was the chief director on Space Dandy as well, and he's got another one in the works right now called Carol and Tuesday. It's actually written by Aya Watanabe, so that should be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is the thing. I think this movie is a great addition to the Cowboy Bebop franchise, and I think that if you finish watching the series, to be honest, I don't think this is the kind of movie that you want to watch at the end of the series. I think that the timing of the movie was what led to a lot of people not liking it as much. I think that if they'd basically put the movie out mid-series, they split the series into two, had the movie in the middle. So it was kind of at the height of the relationship between Faye and Spike and Jet and Ed. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then it would be kind of the perfect fit, perfectly placed, so to speak. Obviously, that would mean some kind of structural changes to the story, because there are some elements, there are plot holes in this. There are things that don't actually make sense or don't get explained, so they do make sense. Like I said, it's not a perfect movie, but it's a Cowboy Bebop movie that fits in with the main series. It has a lot to like and, to be honest, niggly bits to dislike. So
yeah, I'd say the same.
Yeah, it's a recommendation from me. And if you're a fan of Cowboy Bebop and you haven't seen this, then you really owe it to yourself to watch it.
Good.
So that's us. Yeah, that's us for this week. So what did we do again? We did...
Yeah, the Prison School live action.
Yes.
We had
Digimon Try 2.
So we basically had Pawn followed by Pawn.
Well, it wasn't porn. It was, you know, sexy plants and angsty kids.
Sexy plants and angsty kids. I am not calling this show that. We'll call it a Shakespearean bromance, just to throw people off.
Oh, and then have the picture of Prison School on.
No. Maybe.
Was part of us had hopes Patrick Stewart and Sam McKellen are like listening in. We do love our anime, don't we? We do.
What was it a few weeks ago?
Oh,
Senran Kagura fan.
No, yeah. Can you imagine though, Ian McKellen going, Patrick, what was that one with the tentacles?
Oh,
so times. Anyway. All of our shows are available on wherever you get your podcasts from, okay? Or they should be. And if they're not, then let us know and we'll fix them. You know, we'll fix them right.
We'll do it good. We know what you want.
We'll go around, you know, we'll sort them out. Anyway, yeah. I don't know why I went down that route. Yeah, if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have our own Twitter, which is Mark.
At Keyframe Podcast.
Or you can email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. You can find loads of stuff on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, including our Patreon links, which, you know, we would love it if you could support us through Patreon. Anything you can provide is greatly appreciated, and we will give you... No, I'm going to change it. Basically, it's protection money. You know, you're paying us not to give you a hug when we see you, and you've got to remember, both Tucky and I are very, very large. And have crushing power.
Hey, I'm training for a 10K race. I'm kind of slimmer.
I'm kind of slimmer as well. That doesn't mean that I'm not still kind of half a bear. You know, I'm not your height, so you're like full bear.
I've already got a reputation, Rob. Stop it.
Anyway, that's your lot for this week. We'll see you all next time. Until then, I have been Rob.
I've been Mark.
And I've been Tucky.
We'll see you all later.
Bye.